Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Elosa podcast. We had a change in hosts and we also changed languages, as you can hear. My name is Jesse, and in this episode I'm sitting down with Ida, who was one of the coordinators at the recent action at Alistunturi. We talked about the action, how she got involved with activism, and Elo Kapina's role in the environmental movement. The current situation at 13th of March is that there have been regular blockades of the cuttings by Metsäliike, but Metsähallitus, the state-owned forest company, has stated that it wants to continue cutting the 400 hectares area. The areas that are cut right now are included in an application for the enlargement of the Alistunturi National Park. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Ida today. Let's start with you, Ida. Can you just introduce yourself real quick and kind of give a background of what you've done before and maybe how you came to work with Elo Kapina?
Yeah, well, I'm Ida. And I would say that I'm an environmental activist and forest activist. And I have started my activism with Luontoliitto. In English, it's Nature League, and it's a Finnish environmental organization for youth. And I started in the forest group there, doing, for example, inventories in Old Code Forest, looking for endangered species from the forest that were in a threat to being cut down. And then I just started to be more and more involved to the forest activism, and about 2 years ago, I found my way to Elo Kapina when I started to think that we also need more direct action related to forest issues in Finland, because forestry is the biggest reason for biodiversity loss in Finland, and we really need to start to take action against of this destruction of habitats and destruction of forest, which is happening in Finland.
All right. Yeah, sounds very good. So basically, if I understood correctly, you kind of started as a supporting person, or rather as someone who tried to find out where endangered species are and kind of to guide where actions should take place. Or was it just to get a kind of register of the endangered or the kind of valuable or especially valuable areas?
Maybe both. It's like in Finland, there is not so much knowledge about the natural values of our forests. There is a lot of knowledge about how much trees is growing in forests and things like that, but not so much knowledge about what sort of nature there is. So one thing that environmental organizations and like volunteers and activists do in Finland is just to search for that information to then be better able to argue that this forest should not be cut down, it should be protected. And then, because I've been doing that, then I've also seen that sometimes even when you find a lot of endangered species from the forest, or you can otherwise say that it's a really, really old or valuable for the biodiversity, it's still not protected. Like sometimes that just doesn't help, and that's why I think in direct action and the civil disobedience in this forest is important. And maybe I started more giving people information and being like, hey, there is this forest, maybe we should do something there. But then I've begun to do more and more actions myself.
So you've used a lot of terms now which not everyone might understand, or the organizations also. So maybe you could start by kind of explaining the difference between Luontoliitto and Elo Kapina, and kind of basically the differences between the two organizations and how they work together also.
Well, Luontoliitto is oldest environmental organization in Finland. It's 80 years old, and it have been doing a lot of environmental education and also then activism related to forest, but also related to other environmental issues like climate and Baltic Sea and protecting wildlife and things like that. And yeah, as I said, Luontoliitto is an organization for young people, for youth and children. And yeah, it has like two basic goals, which is like educate people, and especially children and young people, about the nature, and like help them to form this like personal relationship with nature. And then on the other hand, it also does activism, but not so much civil disobedience, but like other sort of activism, like making these forest inventories, or organizing legal protests, or campaigning and stuff like that. And then Elokapina is Finnish Extinction Rebellion, and it's not an organization, it's movement. And it's movement which is mostly known from doing civil disobedience. Of course, Elokapina also does a lot of other things, but that's maybe like the heart of the organization. And yeah, in Finland, Luontoliitto and Elokapina are working together, especially in these forest issues. Maybe in a way that Luontoliitto maybe knows where there is forest under the threat, and they can provide information about it. And then Elokapina is the one who goes, or Elokapina activists are the ones who go to the place that maybe stop loggings and do stuff like that. And this cooperation started in Karttimonjoki 2021, where actually Greenpeace stopped cuttings, stopped loggings in a state-owned forest, which was really, really, really old, almost primary forest. And then after Greenpeace had stopped loggings, then Luontoliitto and Elokapina activists started to guard the forest to make sure that loggings are not continuing anymore. And yeah, it had been more than a year, and it's still the loggings haven't continued. And then in Karttimonjoki, many activists from Luontoliitto and from Elokapina also met each other and started to think that yeah, like this would be a good idea if we continue cooperating and protecting forests together.
All right, yeah, very interesting how it all kind of ties it, or goes together and ties into each other, and how the organizations or movements can kind of complement each other. Then you've already, I guess this is kind of a more general knowledge question. Many people might be able to answer it themselves, but how is biodiversity linked with climate change as a larger phenomenon? Could you try to explain this?
Well, first of all, like climate change and biodiversity loss are like, I see them a lot as the same thing. It's they both are caused by human actions, and they are part of this larger like environmental crisis that's going on, and how human actions are changing the environment we are living, and changing our planet and changing our nature. And especially in Finland, it goes a lot hand by hand. But like for example, destruction of forests, it's where like you it destroys carbon sinks and carbon storage, but it also destroys biodiversity. And then in if you think of from the practical point of view, it's also like a biodiversity and nature is kind of our best way to what is the English word, we have like climate change going on, and this climate crisis, and even if we stop all the emissions now, the climate will still change at least a bit. And then richer biodiversity we have, the better we can like face these changes which are coming. Nature is more resilient to the changes that are coming, and that's why protecting biodiversity is one of the most important things if we want to like keep our planet habitable and keep our environmental suitable for us and other species, even the climate is changing, especially here in north where climate is changing even quicker than nearer to the equator.
Yeah, very well said. I think only thing that I would add to that is to, I mean, you hinted at this already, but basically to understand that when we lose biodiversity, an ecosystem cannot function without certain species in it. Many people, of course, know about bees as pollinators, for example, but there's many, many other examples, and especially with insects, it's very important that we have this mass dying of insects all over Europe. So it's important to understand that with biodiversity loss, ecosystems collapse, and when ecosystems collapse, then you have even more biodiversity loss and plant and animal die-off, and that, of course, also releases carbon. And it's really hard to come back from in many cases because, for example, well, one example that also springs to mind from Germany is the die-off of spruce trees, which is from a parasite that lays its eggs in the bark of the tree, and that basically leads to mass die-off of forests. And of course, when the forests die off, they release a lot of carbon. So that's just one example how biodiversity loss and kind of this climate change as an external pressure can accelerate biodiversity loss.
Yes, and with both like climate crisis and biodiversity crisis, we can talk about these tipping points that if we go too far, there is no coming back, and yeah, we need to like stop it before we go too far.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we can jump maybe a bit more specifically into the protests at Aalistunturi. So now they have been going on for a month. Metsähallitus has continued logging. I know that there were multiple rounds of arrests, multiple rounds of protests also. So could you just sketch out what you know, basically, but could you just basically kind of draw a picture of the whole situation and how it's going from your view?
Yeah, protests have now been going on for a month, but the whole situation started the way before. In April 2021, this group of local people suggested that this area in Aalistunturi should become a national park, and they made like this official suggestion for environmental ministry. And after a couple of months, Metsähallitus, which is a state-owned company that that manages state-owned forests, then announced that now we have this 1,000 hectares of logging plans in this area. So just after them, local people had come up with the national park plan. And then, a lot of people were against these loggings, but Metsähallitus was making clear that we are going to do them anyway. And then this January, they started the loggings, and that's when our protest began. So, basically, we just went there and blocked the road that leads to the loggings. So there's this forest road that doesn't lead any other place but to the forest where the logging sites are. So we just went in the middle of night and put the tent in the middle of the road. And then when in the morning, when these harvester drivers came to work, then they couldn't go, and then they couldn't continue with the loggings. And during the first block, we had something like 16 people there, and we were able to block the loggings for 2 days, and after that, police came and detained everyone who was in a camp at the time, and took our tent and took us, and we went to Rovaniemi, and then we were, detained for almost 20 hours, and when we got back, then we were like, okay, what should we do? Oh, let's go back. And we went back to the place, but of course, like when we are in North Finland, distances are really long. So we were something like more than 100 kilometers away from the place. So it took a while for us to get back and pick up all our stuff with police just left there. We had a car, so police just packed all our stuff inside of the car and drove it to the nearest parking place, and we pick it up there. And then after that, let's plan a bit. And after that, we have been the same have been going on during for Mondays. So we have gone there in Sunday between Sunday and Monday and blocked the road, and then we have blocked the cuttings for a while, and then police have come and taken us away. And we haven't been able to achieve our goal, which is of course that all these loggings are stopped and Metsähallitus takes the machines away and promises not to cut there anymore. But we have still achieved quite a lot. We have achieved a really huge public discussion around forests and around forestry in general in Finland and around, like, is this state-owned company acting sustainably and is this okay? And that's happening quite great, because this is not just about this one forest in Aalistunturi. This is about forestry in general. State-owned forestry is quite awful and really unsustainable. And it's good that we have been able to raise discussion around it and challenged the like normal way of doing forestry. And of course, got a lot of attention to this area, which is good if we think that someday we would like it to be a national park. And right now, some people are still up in the north and planning maybe to do something new. But yeah, situation changes all the time, so we are not yet sure what we can do next.
Yeah, good to know. Good summary of the whole situation and how it's developing. Now you talked a bit about the participation in the protest, that there were many tens of people over the time, that you got a lot of media attention, even though, and also that of course you had multiple kind of contacts with the police, people got detained, and it kind of developed in a way that you did this as a weekly action. And I would just like to know how your personal judgment of that is, how it all works together. So, like, on the one point you get media attention, of course, and there was a kind of discussion all over Finland in the media about this topic, but then also that people get detained for it, and that kind of idea, like, how would you say, how it's kind of hard to measure, of course, but in your opinion, like, how effective is this way of dealing with it? And yeah, maybe you can talk also a bit about I will leave it with that. Maybe I'll ask a follow-up question.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, at least from my personal point of view, I'm really, really proud of this action. I think we have, like, this has been really successful. Maybe I have quite a personal touch for this, because I've been doing a lot of inventories in the forests, in state-owned forests, and I've seen how Metsähallitus is all the time logging valuable forests and logging forests that should be protected and lying about what they're doing. And that's why it's just that we got this now on a spotlight and we are, like, so in this light and saying that, hey, look, this company is doing wrong things, and it's doing it in state-owned land, so a land that we should be owned by all of us. So I think that's, like, a big victory already. But of course, like, this, it's also a really sad situation. Like, it's really sad that that some group of activists need to go over and over again to stop something that shouldn't be happening at all, like, in the first place, and they are going to be detained because of that. And especially during the last block, which we had this Monday, there was, in the end, there was just two activists blocking the road with the tripod, and then 20 police came to detain them. And I think that was really, like, a symbolic, that was something that tells so much about Finnish relationship with nature, that the destruction of nature is so important that you take 20 police in North Finland, where police resources are at least should be really low, and then they go to detain two people because it's so important that the destruction of nature can continue. So of course that's also like really sad that why our society is like this. And even I think like, oh, this action, at the same time it makes me so happy. I'm so amazed how many people are willing to travel to the north and stay in a forest in the middle of the winter and do these incredible things and risking their freedom just to protect the forest, and that's amazing. But at the same time, I'm really sad that why do we even need to do this when the state itself have promised to stop the biodiversity loss and protect 30% of the land, and even all these promises have been made, nothing has happened and nothing has changed.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answered the question at all.
Yeah, I think that was a sufficient answer. Also, well, I guess when you're there on the ground at the kind of barricade or the protest, could you tell a bit about what you? Well, you could tell about it like a both perspectives. Maybe you could tell on the one side a bit how you personally have engaged with the police, and then also how you see their role structurally. So what kind of role do they play in the larger organization, or in what's happening there with the cutting of valuable forests?
Yeah, well, my personal engagement about the action, or just like about my meetings with the police.
Yeah, basically you could start with that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, I have been participating always all the blocks, not the latest one, but the three first ones. And like the first one was really like
basically they did a raid, right? They came at night with snowmobiles and cars and raided you.
Yes. Yes, that was always hilarious when you think it now. Of course, at the time it was a bit scary and really intense, but now it's a bit hilarious. But yeah, we had like seven activists sleeping in a tent, and we had just began to eat some evening snack and going to sleep in our sleeping bags. And then we just hear a car, and someone asks like, "Yeah, Ida, can you go to check if it's some like local people who come?" Like if some local people are coming to meet us or something, because some local people had just some hours ago. And we sit at our camp, and then I go, and then I just see that there was like one police car after another coming with this dark forest road, like at after 9 p.m. And it was really like, I was like, whoa, okay, I think they are going to detain us now, because there were so many cars. And then, yeah, they kind of like went around our tent, and they had snowmobiles, and they had these like police with some, I don't know, a bit like a the guns that gave a bit like science fiction vibes. And then they were like, hey, come out of your tent. And then some people tried to be like, yeah, like they were trying to like follow the order to leave, but then police was just like, yeah, we detained you all. And yeah, it was like they really. I really felt that they wanted to scare us away. So they wanted to show like, oh, we are. There is a lot of us, and we will now take you, and don't come back. And yeah, it was after a while. After some time, like now, it just feels a bit absurd and even funny. And they were even saying that, yeah, we are sad that you didn't try to escape, because we had these snowmobiles, so we can chase you in a forest and stuff like that.
Basically, but they want to do a bit of cosplaying and like.
Yeah. It felt a lot like that. And they came from Oulu, which was like 400 kilometers away.
Yeah.
So they had come from quite far away, from quite far away. And yeah, I really felt that they wanted to like scare us. And after we were like, it was an interrogation. I don't know what the word is in English, but they asked these questions, and after that, and then we heard that yeah, like this forestry company Metallitus is demanding like 30,000 euros of charges from us because of the lost income they got from this 2 days we were blocking the loggings. And when I heard about that, I was again like, I don't know, I maybe want to just laugh at this because it's really felt that they want to now scare us. They are like, oh, we will demand so much money from this activist and we will come with so many police that they won't want to come back. And then in the end, it just made me to want to go back even more because I felt that now we can't let them to scare us away with charges and detaining us. Like, I don't know, I just feel that if they are using force, then we need to be even more resilient.
I mean, it's not many people, of course, they kind of protect their own police, like their own national police, in that way that they say like, oh well, they're so like helpful and friendly, and I feel that they really do protect and serve. It's the motto of many police forces. But when you look at the legislation that has been passed in the last couple of years with kind of climate action getting more and more popular, especially in Britain, but also in Germany, like protesters can face very harsh legal consequences, high fines, sometimes even prison time, even if it's really unwarranted. And that all of this basically because they want to defend the ecosystems that we all depend on. And I think with the recent floods last summer in Pakistan, for example, I know that shook me quite severely. I know that there had been ongoing droughts in Somalia also. So there have been real consequences of climate change, like things that can be really linked to it already. So there have been, like, people have died due to climate crisis and due to the changes in weather patterns already. So then I think it's even more irresponsible of the police to stand on the side of the Finnish state or Metsähallitus or the forest companies that make a living or that make their money basically off destroying the livelihoods of all the people on the planet, but also especially, of course, of those people that are vulnerable more than we are here in the global north, because they oftentimes, of course, do not have the kind of security system or social security systems that we have, and they don't have so much social wealth to fall back on. But yeah, maybe you could tell a bit about your perspective. Like, what do you think the role of the police is in this kind of larger context? Like, do you think that, yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, like, when police comes to the action and starts to detain or remove activists, they are just doing their job, which is kind of understandable. But then at the same time, it's really absurd, because usually, as here in Alexandria, but usually in many, many protests, activists are just demanding the state to do what state has already promised. Because, for example, in Finland, together with many other European countries, have promised to do things to end the biodiversity loss and do ends to cut their emissions, and then they are just not doing it. And then when activists go to demand that, hey, why you are doing this, even you promised to do otherwise, and then like they face an aggression from the state. I see the police is kind of like a institution that's like then protecting the state or the company or whatever who the activists are against, and then I feel there is like a lot of like it's a symbol for what's going, but like, what, I don't know, for some way I feel it's a symbol for what's wrong in our society. It's that I don't know, when you are a kid, you think that police should be protecting what's right. But in the end, it's not that. Police protects what's legal, and what's illegal is not always right. Actually, we live in a world where many bad and wrong things are legal. And that's the whole problem in our system.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, in the case of Finland, of course, forestry is a huge vested interest. It's a huge has a huge economic or like has huge economic power, and has also a very long tradition in Finland, and also a very long tradition of lobbying politics, and also of course bribing politicians to ensure that they keep their profits. And even though Metsähallitus just might be a state-owned company, they are still, of course, their primary motive, of course, is still to make profits. So in the end, it doesn't really matter, because if they follow this profit motive, then they are forced into a conflict with these ideas of natural conservation and keeping biodiversity, for example. So they are, by the very nature, the way that they are set up, they're basically forced to engage in natural destruction. So that, I think, will not go away. And from kind of the way that I've understood it, there has been in the recent times, due to the war in Ukraine, even a bigger incentive for companies to cut on and to cut further up north, because a lot of the kind of older wood that we got, the older lumber that we got from Siberia, where there's still, of course, large amounts of forest that are quite like that are either not intensively logged or haven't been logged for a long time, and since they cannot export their wood anymore to large parts of Europe, it's so that it has become more attractive to log up here in the north, where this kind of wood is still available. And of course, especially these older kind of forests are especially like especially these older kind of forests are important to protect, because they have a lot bigger biodiversity than the forests that are in the south of Finland that have been intensely forested for many, many decades already.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, like it's just an absurd situation that we have this forest industry, like these companies that make billions of profits by using the Finnish nature, and at the same time they need to cut farther out north and older forest, like the last primary forest, the old growth forest, because there is just not forest for them to cut down left anymore because they have cut so much forest.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and recently I checked, and interestingly enough, even though it's such a big industry, it only makes up like 3 or 4% of Finland's GDP. So it's yeah. So if you weigh up basically the kind of two things, like on the one side you have protection of our of the biodiversity and of our natural ecosystems that protect our climate also and protect our livelihoods. And then on the other hand, you have something as like marginal as 4% or 3% of Finland's GDP that is created by the whole forest industry. Then I think it really puts things into perspective, because of course, like there, I saw a few interviews on Yle, with people who work in the forest industry, and of course, their jobs depend on this kind of work also. But if you think about it, it's really not a huge part of our national income. It's like a very small percentage of our wealth, basically. And it takes away the basis of future generations. So I think it's really important to keep in mind the kind of dimensions we're dealing with here. Like on the one side, it's a few millions of profits maybe in a year for these companies, and on the other side, it's the loss of our livelihood in the future. So yeah, just to put this into perspective a little bit.
Yeah, and forestry have been like really important for Finnish economy, and it have been like employing a lot of people, but after like we have like bigger machines and bigger factories and like things like that, that people go like development, then it gives less and less jobs all the time, and a lot of wood goes to the pulp, which is then exported to outside of Finland. And yeah, like people still think that, oh, this is really important to our economy and this gives so many people income and so many people jobs, but that's not just true anymore. That was in the past. It's not what it is now. And sometimes I even think that because forests have been important for our economy, we are kind in the past, we are kind of like own them, that we now try to protect them. Because we have been using them so much.
Yeah.
It's kind of like paying back what we have got.
Yeah, of course. And to go back to your point about the kind of development of new technologies and how it reduces the amount of labor that you need. I talked to one person driving a harvester once, and he told me that in a day they can do like an 8-hour shift, maybe it was a 12-hour shift, I'm not quite sure, but they can basically cut between, it depends much on the forest of course, but they can cut between 1,000 and 4,000 trees, right? And the average being like around 2,000, I think. So if
so
you
much.
Think yeah, and if you think it's like 2,000 trees in one shift for one person, how many people would you have had to employ when people were still using chainsaws? And then how many people would you have had to employ back when the people still used axes and horse carts, right? Or horse sledges. So the amount of labor needed, is, of course, was like massively cut down. And then if you think about it, okay, how much of this increase in efficiency was used to pay the labor better, or make sure that the people who are now unemployed get a better social security system? And of course the relations are laughable, right? So a harvester driver today might have like a higher standard of living and might get a better wage than someone working in the 30s or in the 60s or in the 70s, but it's not that much more. Like if you get 20 times more efficient with your labor, then you don't suddenly pay the machine driver 20% 20 times more of a wage. Of course not. You give maybe like a slight wage increase, and the company maybe has a bit to pay a bit more taxes for social security, but it's not in any relations. Most of the profits that you make from new technological innovations, of course, stay with the company and flow into the private bank accounts of the shareholders. So it's not really used for the common good technological advancement.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then, okay, so I think what I would like to talk about a bit more, it's kind of a jump, of course, would be kind of, I mean, you've been saying like you've been all at all the protests, you've been in lockup. So I think probably a lot of listeners will be quite new to activism. So I could imagine that many people, when they think of confrontation with the police and maybe being put in lockup and all these kind of things, might get quite put off the whole activism thing, or might be a bit, a bit cautious about these kind of things. And so that they don't have a wrong expectations of what to expect when they do go to a protest. First of all, I think it's quite common sense to just say that, of course, not all protests have the kind of same intensity. Some are kind of lower intensity protests that are legal actions, or street protests, street demonstrations that are registered and are fully legal, where people don't have to fear repercussions. Don't have to fear to be put in lockup. But if it does come to an action like this, where it was quite clear to everyone involved, I think that even though you could be a supporting person and you, of course, could go away when the police asked you to, you didn't have to be put in lockup. there's still always the danger that you still get caught along with all the others, like you said, in the first police action against you. So could you just tell a bit about the kind of your experience going to prison, or it's not prison, but kind of a holding cell, and kind of your experience, and kind of how did you emotionally handle it, and what came of it?
I think the most important is to remember why you are doing what you are doing. And if you remember that, then everything is quite easy, at least for me, like from emotional point of view. Of course, like it's so many emotions you go through. It's like at the same time, like for example, in Alistunturi, at the same time, it was like, oh, maybe, yeah, you get like adrenaline and a bit scared and like that when police comes and you see them and there's so many of them, then maybe at least for me it's always like, now I feel sad, this is over, now the loggings continue and I can't do anything for it. But like, yes, as long as I remember that, what I did for a reason, and I was doing the right thing, then I just take everything that comes. And I myself personally kind of like even enjoy being detained, because then usually you get like I get to be in quite a like a quiet place with nothing to do. And after a really intensive action with a lot of emotions, a lot of things to do, maybe for example in Alistunturi, after not sleeping for many days, just being and like, yeah, you are not allowed to do anything, and like you are not able to do anything but just be. Then it's even some way it's even good for me. And especially this time we were like detained. We were put to the same room with many people, so then we had time to talk about what had happened and go it through and talk about our emotions. And I think it was quite good. But of course, it's not always the case. Sometimes it's not nice. Sometimes it's stressful, and maybe police or guards are not behaving so politely or well. And then, yeah, just to remember that I'm doing the right thing here, and I have nothing to feel guilty about. That's important. And yeah, activism is so many other things than being detained. That's something you see like in media, that oh, now there is a police carrying away the activists, but it's so much more than that. And for example, in Alistunturi, I was so happy and I felt so privileged to be able to be in a beautiful nature, like surrounded with beautiful nature for many days, and actually see what I'm protecting and what I'm fighting for. And then, yeah, I kind of felt really peaceful when I was detained. I felt like, yeah, now this goes like this, but I've been able to spend amazing time here, and I will come. I kind of like already knew that I will come back.
Well, yeah, I mean, you touched, I think, on many points which are like, which I share very much. So like the first thing that you talked about was this kind of being in a community of like-minded people. And I would like, I think the correct term to use is camaraderie, because you don't have to be friends with the people there to be able to work together and work together really well. Because you are kind of united behind this purpose, and the specific purpose in the action of like, okay, we want to protect this forest. And then I think it's been handled very beautifully. Like at least the time when I was there and experienced it with you together, that the people there are not so interested in, like, even though it's a social kind of situation, people are not at all interested in being dominant or establishing a kind of hierarchy, but it's just there's so much respect there, and there's so much, like, for example, people were regularly asked at certain points in time where it was possible to turn around or for people to go away when it became too stressful for them, or to do something else instead of going with the main group and help in another way if they weren't like emotionally able or willing to partake in the action at kind of the front lines, if you want to say so. And I think it's important to see that this was a very respectful handling of the people's emotional or mental limits, what they could do and what they wanted to do. And then also at the same time to see that, of course, people are still supporting the cause, even though they're not able to, they're not willing or not able to kind of risk their mental health or their physical health by putting themselves in these stressful situations. And they continually support, of course, the action still. Like we had a kind of a base camp. I don't want to tell any specifics now because the action, of course, is still ongoing. And I don't also want to give away the way we used to, we did the action there. But there were people staying at the base camp who were made sure that when people came back from the action, there was something to eat. There was a nice atmosphere. They cleaned up a bit, maybe did some dishes, like all these kind of things that run in the background, that if you see a demonstrator being carried away, like you said, or an activist being carried away, that's not the first thing that comes to mind. But of course, these things still happen in the background, and they're absolutely vital for the protest the protest to continue.
Yeah, they are like in Alistunturi, I think it was quite amazing that like there are people I met the first time in my life, and I immediately felt that I can trust these people, and I can rely on these people. And then there are some people who have the more visible role in the action, who talk to media and who are detained and things like that. But there is this group of people who are not so visible, but whose work is like really necessary and really important, and action couldn't be done without them. And that's really important to remember, as well that it's important to remember that to communicate about your limits, because it makes the action safe and nice to everyone when everyone is honest about what they can do and what they can't do. And then activist who is burned out and too tired is not helping the protest. So that's why I think we managed quite well in Alistunturi, that everyone was able to do their part, but also communicate about their limits and not push too far. Even we were pushing really far by walking 8 kilometers in the middle of the night to the action place and things like that.
But also there, I think the physical kind of part of it is easier to, it's much easier. And also the kind of mental stress of being, for example, detained is much more easy to carry. If you know that you're not doing this alone, you have your convictions, you know, there's other people sharing them, and also other people taking care of you. You know, when you get out of the detainment, there will be people that pick you up, they take care of you. You know, when you're skiing in the night, then you know that there will be a point where people stop and ask about how you're feeling and how you're doing and if everything's okay. And that, of course, they will not leave you behind. And I think that's... and then also, even though you talked about the two kind of groups, the kind of ones in the front, the support group, what was also really nice to see was because you were asked many times during the action what you were able to contribute, what you were willing to do for the action, it was possible for you to switch from one to the other, and you might be able to be on the front lines for a day or two, then go back to supporting for a few days, then go back to the front line if you wanted to. And there was this kind of mobility from one to the other, and everyone was one team. Of course, there wasn't a big separation between the teams. So I think that was very, very good. Yeah, and then I think I want to ask another question, which is about the kind of impact that the nature there had on you, because you described it as very beautiful. I've experienced it many times as very beautiful, very calming, and even like very meditative to be in these kind of environments myself. So maybe you can talk a bit about how it affects you being in such a place, and also what you think we are losing when these areas are cut and effectively destroyed.
Yeah, well, I feel I have like a really deep connection to Finnish nature. It's kind of like the nature where I've grown up. I'm surrounded by this nature, and when I was in Alistuntara, I got like a lot of energy, a lot of power from the nature around me. Or every like sunset and the stars during the night and everything was just reminded me that like yeah this is what we need to be doing right now, and my whole activism have kind of like started by that. Yeah, I was just like hiking and being in a nature a lot, and then I started to think that oh this nature is giving me so much, now I need to give something back, and that's like when I started to do activism I was like yeah it's not enough that I just enjoy this nature because this nature really needs my help, and that's what I felt in Alistuntari also, like I'm helping this nature because I love it, and in the end this nature is helping me, and especially in Alistuntari where the weather was all the time so good, and somehow it felt that oh this whole place is helping us, and that was quite amazing. And yeah, same time it makes me really sad. We have a amazing and beautiful nature in Finland, and of course everywhere in the world. And everywhere in the world it's different. We have so many like different species, different places, habitats, like and they all have like their own kind of life and no kind of feeling in them. And then when we are destroying them, we are just losing it. And it feels like quite awful that how can we lose something that's beautiful, and we know we are losing it, and we are kind of like doing it on purpose. And for example, forestry in Finland, it's like, yeah, we know that we are losing this biodiversity. And when you clear cut a forest, you can, it's visible the change. Like now you have a forest here, and now you don't have it anymore. And then people are just like accepting that. They're like, oh, okay. Now we are again lost some forest and some biodiversity, and it's absurd for me to understand because I can't accept it. I need to like fight against it, and if I love something, I need to protect it. And yeah, I think we are like losing a really big part of ourselves if we are losing the nature around us.
Yeah, I think that's a really good kind of note to end on. I think the basically, yeah, when you clear cut the forest, I think it looks like a battlefield afterwards. It looks like some kind of war had taken place there. And when I think about it, always I try to think about the fact that everything that you see is kind of someone's backyard, right?
Yeah.
There's always people living there that will walk by there, that will, I don't know, go skiing there, walk their dog. And then one day they're in this beautiful ecosystem, this forest that becomes a part of them that they experience and have very intimate connection with it. And then the next time they go there, it's just been taken away from them, and it's like a part of you being taken away. And I think it's really important that we understand this concept that we're taking something away from ourselves. Like we're kind of, yeah. Basically, we're stealing our own future in a broader sense, but also we are taking something from ourselves right now. Like we're kind of limiting and impoverishing our own experience of life when we do this kind of thing. Do you have anything else you want to share?
I don't know. I think this was really beautiful said and really good way to end this. I just like wish that more and more people could see nature and see forest like I see it, just with love and care. I know many people in Finland care about the nature, but I wish they would care enough to do something to protect it.
Thank you, Ida, for this very lively conversation. I had a really great time talking to you today, and I hope everyone else enjoyed this conversation too. And if you, dear listeners, are interested in getting involved in environmental action, then please look in the description below. You will find some links there to the Elokapina website, or you can just Google, you can just look up elokapina.fi, elokapina.fi, to join Elokapina or get informed about the actions that we are doing or get in contact with us. And yeah, I think this can really inform your decision a bit better, and for the people that have been involved in the environmental struggle or other related struggles. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed your time as well. And we will see each other on the next one.
Fire!